The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
You're on the eve of the budget, and there's plenty in the newspapers about it, what we are likely to get, what it's likely to mean for your pocket. I am joined on the line by Dr. Barra Rowntree, Assistant Professor in Economics and Programme Director of the Joint ESRI-TCD-MSc, Masters in Science, in Economic Policy at Trinity College Dublin. There's quite the mouthful. And Emmett Oliver, the Business Correspondent with The Hard Shoulder. Good morning to you both, and thanks for joining us on the show. As with Barra, listen, we might start with you, and one thing we wanted to ask, because there's an awful lot of money being thrown around, front page of the Business Post talking about 28 billion. And we, you know, we're wondering, is this as boomy as the boom days? Emmett Oliver, we might actually start with you on that, because obviously you were covering this during the boom as well. Like, are we beyond boom? Are we boomier than boomy?
Go up another few notches. I mean, you're looking here at a surplus starting. Now, I know there's windfall gains in this, but you're talking about a surplus of 25 billion euros starting position for Jack Chambers. So we can say, you know, empirically, this is the strongest starting position of any Minister for Finance ever in the history of this island or this state. So it is an extraordinary position to be starting. And yes, if you take away those windfall gains, which come from Apple and general corporation tax revenues, according to the figures by the department, you'd be coming out with a deficit of 4.5 billion. So you can look at this either way. You can say this is an unprecedented once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape the public finances of Ireland and probably the wider economy, or you can say this is just a lucky sort of air pocket for a period of time and we'll go back to normal service in the next few years and the economy is not quite strong when you look below the surface. So you can look at this either way on two levels. I call it sort of the paradox of plenty for Jack Chambers, because he's got so much money and such a strong starting position, he's almost got too many choices and the burden sort of rises, because I think certainly personally, and I've studied a lot of budgets and participated in a number of them, you know, when people look back at this in a few years' time, will we be saying, yes, the right decisions were made and that was a very far-sighted and fiscally, you know, very kind of very progressive budget? Or will we be saying it was a missed opportunity? We didn't do things that were more long-term, that were more strategic in the choices that were made. So in a strange way, even though Jack Chambers has a lot of money in his pocket, the sort of expectation of what he should be able to do here and the far lasting nature of it, I think at least, is actually going to be quite high when he stands up on Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, it's a weird pressure point to be in for him, I suppose. And this is all in the context of the election as well, because it's not just a budget, it's the last budget before the general election, no matter what the timing of that is. Have we seen that many pre-election budgets in the past? And is there any sort of evidence that spending lavishly now will actually win him votes?
Yeah, well, we know of the concept called the political cycle, which is different to the economic cycle, and often they will come into alignment just before a budget. So in other words, we tend to see, and not just beating up Ireland on this, but generally internationally, governments tend to spend more as they head towards the precipice of an election. That's sort of the literature shows that governments get more looser in terms of their fiscal position and what they want to do. I mean, people will say you're being bribed with your own money, etc. But certainly they do loosen the purse strings as they see that election in the offing. The added complication, of course, in Ireland here is you've got three parties in a coalition. All three of them are jostling for political space and oxygen. They've all got their own pet projects. You see in the paper this morning, the Green Party, you're looking to get a baby boost, as they call it, so a payment for newborn children. You've also got then Heather Humphreys saying that we don't necessarily need to increase the rates for unemployment assistance. That seems to be a project of hers. So you can see the party sort of breaking out and trying to map out their own territory as we head into the election. A lot of these payments we're going to see in this budget are transfer payments of the old school. There's lots of things to be said in favour of many of them, but I suppose they don't all necessarily increase the productive capacity of the economy into the future. So that comes back to the idea of, like, will we be looking back at this time as sort of we didn't do a whole lot long term to change the economy on the back of this? And I think that's where the pressure might come on politically in the next few days with the Apple money in particular. Like, what is the long term use and best use of that money, and will it be outlined properly for the citizenry on Tuesday afternoon when the minister takes to his feet?
And on that point, Dr. Barra Rowntree is also on the line. Good morning to you. Where do you think that balance is right, in that they've a lot of money here, there's a big opportunity, but there's also big risk as well of inserting in too much, of overheating the economy, and of, as Emmett has said, just squandering it?
Absolutely. And again, we have huge I suppose, gaping holes in our public infrastructure. And that's something I think everyone has agreed needs to be addressed. But because the economy is running so hot, because, you know, unemployment is so low, if we were just to spend a whole bunch of money on the infrastructure, we're not going to get, you know, if we spent the 14 billion of Apple money on infrastructure, we're not going to get 14 billion euro worth of infrastructure. We're going to push up the price level further. We're not going to get value for money. So really what we're in a position is, if the government wants to address those gaps in infrastructure, and I think, again, there's a reasonable amount of consensus that that is where the priority should be, it needs to do less elsewhere in terms of current expenditure, in terms of tax cuts, in terms of social welfare increases. But that's not what it's saying it's going to do. Rather, it's saying we're going to do, you know, everything everywhere all at once. And I think that, you know, again, we know why this is. It's because there's an election coming, and this is always the case. You look back to, you know, the 2007 budget, the 2002 budget, when things were boomy, the government poured fuel on the fire then, and it's looking like it's going to do the same thing, albeit maybe to a little bit lesser extent, and hopefully with much less damaging long-term consequences.
Yeah, have you seen anything from the ministers to date that would suggest they are going to be more constrained? Because we're going to be talking to Diarmaid Farrelly, the historian, later on in the show, about a book he has on sort of modern history. And one of the things he points out is there was spending rules in the early 2000s, and every year Charlie McCreevy breached them. And there's been a spending rule introduced here on current expenditure in the last few years, and every year they've breached it.
Yeah, and that's a real problem. You know, Charlie McCreevy used to summarise his approach as, when I have it, I spend it, when I don't, and that is not a good approach. It's almost the opposite of what any kind of good economic analysis tells us we should do. It's, you know, you want the government to be able to spend more when there's a recession, and it should then hold things back when there isn't. And again, things are distorted a bit by just the amount of money coming in, both from Apple, but also from these, you know, Apple and other companies, in terms of the excess corporation tax receipts. And so, as Emmet was saying, you know, the underlying figures in terms of the budget are that we have a deficit if you strip out what might disappear. And so that's not a good basis to be ramping up, you know, repeated recurrent expenditure on things like schools, hospitals, welfare payments, tax cuts. But again, that is what we're being told is going to happen. And you know, so a more sensible approach here might be to, you know, minimize, indeed don't have any kind of general increases in terms of energy credits or the like. You know, they're giving these, go to people who are doing quite well and don't necessarily need the support. There is a cost of living pressures, particularly at the bottom end of the income distribution, but it makes it harder to address that by giving something to everyone. And again, then, you know, we have things like the inheritance tax cut, 50 million there, that is going to a very, very small number of households. So you have all these things which, you know, each of them on their own are maybe not massive, but they add up. And what they mean is that there is less scope to address these real priorities that we should be trying to address, which is around, in particular, infrastructure, particularly that in relation to housing.
Emmet, earlier in the show, Dan O'Brien was very insistent. He was saying, we're not in a bubble. This is not like the early 2000s or mid 2000s. You covered all of that and the crash. We did have one text in saying, the last time everyone was saying we weren't in a bubble, the country went bankrupt. Are there those safeguards in place now that we can be sure, even though we are spending big when other countries are reining it in, we're not going to have a repeat of what we had 20 years ago?
Yeah, it's really quite frightening, really, just the kind of commonality between now and 2006, 2007. Brian Cowan, of course, was the last Minister for Finance before the crash. And I actually remember his budget speech, and he was really raising public expenditure in a major way. So it does feel bubbly. I mean, I know that's just psychology, but that's also important as well. Obviously, the banks are in a much better position now. So when you talk about safeguards, yes, they're better capitalized. They're very profitable, and they don't have the big exposures to property lending. So in that sense, it's not quite the same. But in terms of the public finances, yeah, you just wonder. I was talking to someone the other day who's in the international tax planning area, and he was effectively saying that, look, one company, it could be Amazon, it could be Apple, it could be one of those big ones, you know, if they were to reduce, even reduce their sort of presence in Ireland, it could have a very significant, punch a big hole in some of these figures. So the fragility of it all is a little bit hard to get your head around, because I could be talking to you a year's time and saying, well, nobody has pulled out, that we're still getting a corporation tax receipts in. The forecast for next year on that front is pretty good as well. But equally, we could be saying we've got a problem here. So you really, if you really want to forecast these things, and Barra's in that sort of game, you probably need to know what exactly are these big US companies planning strategically over the next few years in terms of where they're going to locate their operations and where they're going to be tax resident and all of that. Without that piece of information, none of us really know where our public finances are going to go, because that's the sort of the missing part of the jigsaw puzzle. But as we talked to you this morning, it's an incredibly strong position for Jack Chambers. And let's just hope, as you say, he doesn't squander it.
Barra, do you want to pick up on that then? Because are the sectors we're reliant on now extremely in a corporation tax way as vulnerable as, say, housing was, or even manufacturing before that?
Well, I think the bigger issue is just it's not in our control, right? So we are kind of the beneficiary of essentially the US allowing companies that are US companies to locate some of their profits in Ireland and us to take a cut of them. Now, there's an election coming up in the US. Donald Trump has made it quite clear that he doesn't like that type of stuff, that he thinks American companies should be putting America first. And so there's a real issue that, you know, there could, if he got elected, or indeed if, you know, Kamala Harris and the Democrats decides that they actually, they don't think it's good that Ireland just keeps taking all this additional money that ultimately should probably be being taxed in the US. And so that, I think, you know, the type of crisis that we might encounter or the type of shock that we might encounter is going to be very different from last time. But the key bit is it's not in our control whether it happens, when it happens. Rather, what is in our control is how exposed we are if something does. And I think that's the, you know, we've made some moves towards limiting the risk there. So, you know, the Minister of Finance and Public Expenditure have over the last few years set up these new funds that are essentially putting some of the excess corporation tax receipts into, but not by any means all, or, you know, even close to that. So that is probably where our ability to minimize the risk best comes, is by not blowing all this excess corporation tax receipts, all the Apple money, on recurrent items of expenditure, which, you know, if that money then disappears, means suddenly we have to reverse the USC cut that apparently is being planned. And that's particularly why I think those type of measures don't make a lot of sense, and that we're hollowing out the bit of the tax base that we would have to come back to if and when those corporation tax receipts dissipate.
Yeah.
And so it just doesn't, you know, we don't want to end up that position again. Maybe it would be better now to have a bit of a slower growth, incomes grow by a little bit less, just to try and minimize the impact that, well, if we do get a big shock, that it ends up being what it was in the aftermath of the 07 crisis, which was really, really harsh. And we shouldn't forget just how much incomes fell, just how much pain was inflicted, and just how much, you know, we're still dealing with the legacy of that in terms of the construction sector collapsing. We've never gotten it back to where it is. Lots of people, you know, part of that's immigration, a lot of people went away. Part of it's the finance chains broke. And so those things can have long-term consequences, and we should try avoid them.
Absolutely. Dr. Barry Rowntree and Emmett Oliver, business correspondent with The Hard Show, thanks so much for joining us to talk about the budget.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.